I'll do my best to address them, and it would be nice, except this gentleman's in London, England, and doesn't have phone access to us here in the States. So it'd be nice if we could get that one resolved. So the first question that comes up, Sean, from Sean in England, is what makes the difference between being a stepping stone and the doormat? And I'm not sure, you know, there are a number of different ways I could understand that question, so I'm not sure exactly what direction you're going, but one thing for sure, this work does not support people being a doormat. The word meek in Aramaic is not about, you know, being in the ground and being stepped on or being a doormat. Doesn't mean turn the other cheek, doesn't mean accept every abuse and do nothing about it, but rather to take responsibility for what's going on within your own structure. And if what people, what behaviors, what things happen in the world resonate something in terms of victim mode or doormat, then take responsibility for owning those things and working through them so that you can stand clear, clean, with a mind connected to love and therefore intelligence, and hold people accountable. And so in that sense, every interaction that happens that the mind, that the average mind would, you know, interpret as being negative, would actually become a stepping stone in one's own healing process. Now, for me personally, a thing that really made a big difference in terms of understanding this stuff intellectually and working toward really putting it into practice was the day that I you know, it just became so clear to me. I like everyone else, like virtually everyone else, was raised as a card-carrying member of the One World Religion of Blame. If pain or trauma of some kind came up in my mind, you know, I was in sadness or hurt or rage or whatever, my mind could always show me how it was somebody else's fault. Now, somebody else might have done something really bizarre, outrageous, and insane, and they need to be held accountable for that. But if their bizarre, outrageous, and insane behavior arouses something based in hostility or fear in me, then I have a problem. And the day that I really got loose enough of the membership in the One World Religion of Blame to say, wait a minute, yes, they did something that was clearly inappropriate, maybe even illegal, but that's not the cause of the fact that my mind is now in a disabled position of some form of hostility or fear. And so for me, what really took me to a new level was every time that my mind would come up with some form of hostile or fearful response, which of course in the world's mind would have been perfectly justified, and virtually everybody would say, yay, go for it, they deserve that. And it's like, you know, gee, you know, I saw what that person did, and you're right, they really deserve your rage. But the question isn't, do they deserve your rage? The question is, do you deserve your rage? Because if you do rage, you get the original, they get the carbon copy. And rage is a mental illness. So for me, the breakthrough came when I got loose enough from that mindset of, our whole culture teaches us that somebody else is the problem. I can remember back in the days when I was writing Why Is This Happening to Me Again, I spent a lot of hours in a couple of large bookstores, and I basically went through everything that these bookstores had on forgiveness, whether it was a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, a rabbi, a minister, a priest, a therapist of any kind, and I just read everything I could on forgiveness. And there wasn't one, you know, as these people are writing how they work with people and what's going on, and, you know, they'd be describing their session time with people, and literally every one of them, I didn't find one case where the person was asked, so how are you going to take responsibility for what came up in you when they did that? Every time it was asked, was the question was always some variation on the theme of, well, how did that make you feel? The question, how did that make you feel, comes from the doormat, One World Religion of Blame. The belief that something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. Me means that I'm in denial and I dissociate from the very cause of what's going on inside of me. And now for the rest of eternity, until I undo that denial, for the rest of eternity, every time that comes up, the only way I'll ever get to see whatever that energy is about is when I integrate it into my brain's image of someone else. I project it into them and believe that it's theirs. So for me, I went to a whole new level when I started to be able to say to myself, oh, this response is my mental illness, and I'm going to face and heal my mental illness. So the question no longer becomes, how did that make you feel? The question becomes, am I willing to be responsible for what came up for me? Am I willing to look at the thought sorter that creates this sensation of hostility or fear in me, which is a symbol that, or a signal that, I'm in denial? Am I willing to take responsibility for that and forgive as to that content in my own mind? So one simultaneously moves out of doormat posture, and that situation becomes a stepping stone in their lives. So that'd be my first response to your first comment. I'll have to find out who this Jesse Lee Peterson is to see whether it would be something we could connect with you. Thanks for your suggestion to connect with him. And or maybe you could connect us with him, let him know why you think we would do well together and arrange a conversation. And then the keys to the kingdom are the keys to heaven in the mind. So if we look at the word heaven as, or the kingdom of heaven as the Greeks translated, it sounds like, it made to sound like someplace off in the sky. And if you listen to Yeshua, he's really clear that's not what he's talking about. He says, somebody tells you it's over there, believe them not, it is here, it is now, it is within you. And so, and properly translated from the Greek, from the Aramaic, where the Greeks interpreted it as someplace off in the sky, totally denying what Yeshua was pointing to, he was saying you've got to go inside yourself. Those words would be more properly translated as the community of love. So the place you connect with the community of love is within you, it's inside of you. And so all of the tools that we present are the keys to arriving in that place, whether it's the codependence worksheet, whether it's the power person worksheet, whether it's the reality management forgiveness worksheet, whether it's the commitment. Each one of them is one of the steps in that direction. There is a video on our YouTube channel called The Six Aramaic Keys of Yeshua, and it looks at what the key important pieces of the puzzle are that are missing from the Greek translations of Yeshua's words. So you might want to check that video out. The question that Sean asks here is there a list? Well, my list would be included in the comment that I often make is all of the above. You know, if you go back to day one of our radio show 14 years ago, then everything, every step, every piece of the puzzle, like that's the only thing we've addressed 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year for the last 14 years is what are the keys? How do you do that? And so every conversation revolves around that, though it may not be necessarily expressed that way. And I think one of the most powerful insights into it is what we've done just the last few days on the show is in the Beatitude study. Looking at the Beatitudes, these are the keys to bring the mind into alignment with truth that support physiology becoming energetically a space where love enters because its energy is matched by the presence of love rather than the presence of any form of hostility or fear. And then the forgiveness of anything that doesn't belong within the structure. And reviewing Jeannie's book on healing generations one breath at a time. And basically she's just laying out, here is the process that she went through in order to move closer and closer unfolding politically and economically. But there's nowhere to run. Well, my take would be the geographic cure never works, because when one takes the geographic cure, they go along. To pretend we're not involved in our own lives and creating the challenges that come up is to deny our own creatorship. So, you know, one of the probably the most tragic pieces of news that has ever been fed to us as human beings is that we have had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And everybody loves this idea of being a creator when the creation's going well. And everybody knows who the problem is when the creation's not going well. And isn't their name always them? So my take would be that it's going to take millions of individuals ultimately doing their work to move in the direction of the truth. You know, that idea of, you know, what you are looking for is what is looking. When we start to live out of what is looking into the world, rather than what the perceptual mind constructs for us, then we start to really, truly, literally incarnate. And it's that energy that is going to be the leader. I don't think there's going to be some heroic leader that's going to say, here, look at this. It's going to be people in mass that create a critical mass. You know, Yeshua the physicist talks about a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. What is he saying? He's saying that it's only going to take a few people who will do the work he prescribed. And it is a work to be done. You know, one of my favorite passages is the one where the disciples ask him, you know, what's most important teaching? What does the Creator want from us? What's most important? Function is the presence of Atma. And two, do the work. And half of his disciples say too hard a saying and they leave. And my take is, it's that half that didn't want to do the work that said, these words are too hard to understand. Who can understand them? We're out of here. They're the ones that ran off and made up a religion about how he was going to do it for them. Not going to happen. And then I think that's awesome that you picked up eight Y books, and you put one in a Chick-fil-A book exchange. I didn't know there was such a thing. Maybe that's a thing over in England. I don't know, although I'm not a Chick-fil-A person. So, but that's awesome that you've got some books and you're spreading them around. That's, you know, fabulous. And that might be a good project for anybody to pick that up. And, you know, the book is out of print, so I can't sell you one. But you can go to eBay or Amazon, and, you know, we put enough out back in 29 years ago, I guess, we published the book. And there are about 80,000 copies in print, so there are enough books still floating around on Amazon used or on eBay used that, you know, buy some and share them, pass them around. And, you know, I guess the question, would local libraries accept them? We have had libraries who've carried them. And I don't know in the case of used books. Jeannie was saying that the library here has a used book section. So, you know, give it a shot and let us know how you make out, and we'll put it out there. And where else could you bring used books to? Well, one of the most powerful contributions you can make in terms of expanding the study and the experience is start a support group working with worksheets. And you can do it by Zoom, you can do it in person, and, you know, it will enhance your practice of the tools and expand the possibilities for everybody. And then a last thought from Sean, and thank you for that, where we talked about the right, not right, wrong, not wrong mechanism. Sean saying has the potential to explain and understand more of the mystery of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the mind, or the desert. And, you know, I wouldn't use the word desert to describe the whole function of mind. I would use that word to describe the unconscious function of mind. And there all one mind, but the information we cannot access, you know, when you look at how the mind works through resonance, remember that the law of resonance says that when two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. So I have a middle C tuning fork, and I hit it on the desk, and I put it in front of the moving tuning fork, in front of a second tuning fork that's totally, completely still. Now, because of the law of resonance, because the atomic magnetic structure of those instances is the same, those two structures is the same, there's an exchange of information between them. Energy moves from the activated fork to the one that's standing still. The one that's standing still takes on the energy of the first tuning fork and starts to move in response. That's the energy, that's the vibration that governs all energy fields. And so when resonance occurs, that energy dynamic starts to take over. So the mind is a resonating device. And, you know, people talk about the mind as many different, well, there's a conscious mind, a subconscious mind, an unconscious mind, he made up his mind, he lost his mind, you know, all kinds of different things. But in terms of this function that we're talking about a function of the energy system we call the body in its ability to store information and for that information to move into awareness. And it is truly, you know, one of the things we point out about just about everything is that the ego mind has a cheap copy of everything that's real in the spiritual dimension. And the ego mind's cheap copy of the true mind is what we call thinking. The truth is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens? Something about the color of your car resonates in brain cells because I set up a frequency with my voice, caused air molecules to move, caused a drum in your ear, a little piece of flap of skin in your ear to move, move some bones, create an electrical frequency. That electrical frequency is converted to something that resonates brain cells, and the color of one's car comes up. It's not a thinking process. It's, again, it's just pure resonance. So this the true mind, my take would be, my definition of the true mind would be, in our ability to keep love conscious, active, and present in us, no matter what happens in our world. And then there's this function that we call mental, that most people call mind. I think it's, I would classify it as the cheap copy. And it operates at three different levels. There's what's conscious. Now, it's not a separate from the rest of the mind. It's just if I set up a frequency that matches something in your brain cells, don't think about the color of your car, then that exchange of information takes place, and those brain cells fire the amplitude, you know, like turning up the volume control on your radio or your TV, the amplitude is turned up, so you become conscious of it. So what we are conscious of at any given moment would be the conscious mind. You know, what's your favorite item of clothing? What's the front door of your house look like? What's your favorite food? Notice you're not thinking about the color of your car. So we can cause information to fire, and information displaces information, whatever the strongest resonance is at any given moment. So we have this conscious level of awareness, whatever brain cells are firing at an amplitude, we're aware of it. And then there's the subconscious. Subconscious being that which is just below the conscious level, but accessible. So subconscious information would be the color of your car, the front door of your house, what item of clothing, what food do you like. That's all information stored in your mind, and you can access it anytime that you want. But then there's another level of mind, and that would be the unconscious. And the unconscious part of the mind is that we have put brakes on, that part of us that we've dissociated from through denial. So if I said to anyone who's listening, and I want you to, if you would, just really think about this, what's the biggest issue in your life that you you've been avoiding and haven't been dealing with? What's the issue that you really need to look at and really need to work through? And I'll invite you to notice right now what's happening with your breath. And if we were sitting face-to-face, one-on-one, what virtually everybody would share with me is that when I asked that question, they held their breath and searched for what it is that they were blocking. Now, when one holds their breath and searches for what it is they're blocking, my take is it's as though, you know, in this biocomputer, this body-mind unit, and information is stored in every cell in the structure. It's like we have this, in ancient teaching, it's called the veil of the temple, the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. And it's kind of when people hold their breath and say, I was thinking about something, I was trying to get an answer, and they're holding their breath. My take is the reason they're holding their breath is because there's a part of the database, i.e. from the neck up, that they've decided that all the information is safe, so holding their breath, they can search through that, and they're not going to confront what they're in, what they've dissociated from. And the breath is shut down because what is stored in the rest of the structure is what they've dissociated from. So when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they were saying the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, the barrier built with denial and holding the breath, must be opened. And that's why you'll hear me oftentimes when I'm processing with someone, I'll ask, are you breathing? Because 99.999999% of the time when I'm talking to someone and something starts to resonate that they don't want to look at, that they don't want to deal with, the breath automatically, spontaneously stops. And our invitation is to restore the breath and to go back into contact with that. And so the unconscious, subconscious, conscious are just different amplitudes at which information stored in brain cells are firing. And you're right that the, as your statement here says, the mind or desert cannot serve in two modes at the same time, love/anger and right-wrong. Can't. It's a right-not-right, wrong-not-wrong. It's going to be on one track or the other. It can't do both. It leaves it in confusion when you try to say both. So you can't serve Satan and the active presence of love at the same time. And remember that in Aramaic, the word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. It's not some dude with a red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. You know, you notice the blame game everybody plays. Oh, the devil made me do it. It's something out there. That whole game is all about denial, and we set up our own. And yes, most people live most of their lives trapped in Satan. They're in resistance to, and they are misled by their own minds. Their resistance is to the truth. They lock the breath down and shut down the part of them that holds on to the lie that it's all everybody else's fault, and play the game that they're innocent victims, kind of taking us right back to that first question of being the doormat. So delighted, Sean, to hear that it's making sense, and we're going to rock on. And if you are not aware of it and you haven't taken advantage of it, we have thousands of hours in our archives that you can go back and listen to. So, and we would love for somebody who is appreciating this work and feeling like you're getting something out of it, if someone would step up to the plate and maybe assist us. One of the things we would like to do, and we've got, as I say, somewhere over 5,000 hours of radio shows, and there is a fairly simple way that those radio shows can be converted to MP4s, which are a video format. And when we convert them to MP4s, like if you look on the page regarding the Enlightenment study, Jeannie has taken each of those that we've done, she's converted them to MP4s and put them on YouTube so that you can go back and listen to all of the Enlightenment shows on YouTube as audio tracks. You know, there's just a picture in the background. They're not actually video, but they're audio tracks. And we've got 5,000 or so hours. If somebody feels like you'd like to make a contribution to the work, and you'd like to, you know, take some of your time and do some of that conversion, help us get them on YouTube, that would be awesome. It'd be nice to have someone who, as they're doing it, the ones that don't have notes, radio shows that do not have notes, to take a few notes, put them in it, and make that conversion so we can put them on YouTube. That would be awesome. And or maybe somebody's in a position where you could fund something like that. And, you know, if you're financially well off and you're benefiting from this and you'd like to see us or support us, and, you know, basically every resource we have is about how do we get this to the next group of people. And I think that the YouTube channel, having these available, would be really beneficial in terms of putting this out to the world. So if you're in a position to maybe fund a project like that, to hire a company that would do it or whatever. So just, and if you're benefiting from the work, the other thing you can do is jump on our webpage, whyagain.org, and there's a donate button down at the bottom, and, you know, whatever it is, support us. It would be awesome. Beyond that, I think that pretty much covers what Sean had to say. Have we seen Michael yet?
Yes, he's on. I'm going to turn on his microphone. Welcome, Michael.
Well, hey there, young man. Welcome.
Hello, friends. How are you doing?
Hey, we're rocking. Rock and roll. And I'm glad to hear your voice. I'm looking forward to hearing your report. Just to introduce Michael. Michael's someone who's been at Heartland and been involved in the work now for, I'm not even sure how long, Michael, going on 2 years, maybe? A year and a half, something like that. And Michael was traveling last weekend and came through. I think you said you drove in, was it 2 weeks or 3 weeks, 3,700 miles. So you covered some territory. And Michael was coming through this way. So I had invited him to come and do some work on some issues that he had had. And actually, I really appreciate the fact that Michael took me up on that offer, because we ended up spending a couple of days, and I sort of pulled out the stops on some of the things that tend to be more intense ways to open the structure up and open the mind up, open emotions up to deeper levels of processing. So you've inspired me, Michael, to create a 3-day personal mini intensive for people one-on-one, like we did, using some of the tools that we did. So I look forward to hearing the report, what happened and how you're doing after all that driving, having left here and gone and visit your kids in Atlanta and then off to Texas.
Yes. It was wonderful. And I look back on the past couple of weeks, Michael and Jeannie, and it's amazing how the universe works in our favor. Life is happening not to us, but it's happening for us. So,
absolutely.
Yes, it is so wonderful. I originally, and I did just shy of 3,700 miles ahead of course, you had told our friends on the program that my mom passed. And that took me all the way up to upstate New York, way up upstate near the Canadian border. And I was originally planning to go, you know, up through the center of the U.S., across the Ohio Valley. But with the storms that were, those powerful storms, took me in your direction, and that's how we got speaking and your wonderful invite. So it was wonderful to be able to spend a little time with you and Jeannie, and for the treatments, I was amazed and still amazed at how much better I'm doing, how much better I'm feeling, how much better I can think clear, because I've realized for some time that with the generational trauma, with my posture not being quite where it should be, challenged in that regard, how your work on me, if you will, really, really took me to a much better level. and very grateful for that.
Tell us a little bit about your history.
Yes.
I mean, to the degree that it's reasonable to share, we don't need to get any, you know, deep details, but just kind of a surface, especially your structural history.
Yes, thank you. Structurally, and, you know, outside, it's a physical trauma. I had a abdominal surgery when I was 18 months old. And looking back in my study of health and the things we've discussed, realized that that was a huge trauma for an infant to have to go through. And it brought me to a new level of how many times this happens to young people in the world every day.
Yeah.
Couple that with I broke my two front teeth when they were maybe about 6 months in my little mouth. So very young, what was that, 7 years old, and that was a bicycle accident. And that started a cascade of dental and bone structure challenges in my mouth for years. And that just continued to compound over the years, you know, having root canals in those areas and just trauma to the teeth, and then having to extract those teeth, going to, you know, bridges, and then having to have the bridge removed, and it was, seems like endless, just every few years there was something going on. So all that physical trauma really didn't help.
And the way that your head was operating, the way your structure was, the kind of pain you had, share a little bit about that if you would. I'd like to get a report on, you know, where it was prior to us working and where it is now, just how that has shifted, because I know it's been a pretty intense multi-decade pursuit getting it cleaned up.
Yes, Michael. For years now, well over 25, and it's been, of course, over the years has gotten worse, is neck problems, low back problems, and what it seems like all this trauma has caused improper curves, not only in my neck, but also my thoracic spine, the upper spine, and even the lower spine. So all three areas are compromised, and I would go to many different practitioners and search many different practitioners in different states over the years, get a little better here and there, grateful for what these practitioners have offered, but has not gotten me to where I need to be, and that is correct the situation and optimally look for optimal health. So where I was, again, before I came to see you, and just wonderfully how that orchestrated out, is a fair amount of pain every day. And some days worse, some days not. Now, of the few days that we were together, it really seemed to ease the tensions, ease the muscles, and today I have minimal pain in my neck, especially lower back. Minimal. So definitely things shifted. Clearly, the work that you have accomplished is just miraculous.
Well, that's awesome. I'm delighted to hear that. And, you know, basically when I said you've inspired me, you know, when we do intensives, there's a procedure of hands-on energy field work that I've developed over the last 50 years from every seminar, as I shared with you when we were together, when I first discovered still point breathing, that to me was like discovering a miracle. That was 43, 44 years ago. point. And since then, you know, in researching and looking at, and, you know, I've worked with body workers on four different continents and studied with people all over the globe. And it kind of like the measuring stick of, do I want to put this into understanding with this work? The key was, does it induce a still point in people? If it does, that's the pinnacle of being in process. And so over the last 4 or 5 decades, I've looked at, and that's why I integrated into the hands-on energy field work. And I, of course, I could only integrate what, you know, pretty much I could train anybody to do. And we're not, you know, we didn't go into some deep, you know, training with someone who's got, you know, full knowledge of physiology and, you know, musculature and all of that. Basically, it's energy field work that anybody can put their hands on. You know, our granddaughter does it. She's 5. We trained her to do it, or we're training her to do it. And, but working with you, and you were having been through the amount of trauma you were had gone through, were really clear. Yeah, Michael, I'm ready to go for it. Whatever it takes, I'll do it. And I acknowledge your courage because I did it. I went for it with you. And basically what I did is I pulled out all the stops of all the things. And, you know, probably in the work we did, I drew on at least 30 different trainings that I've done over the last 50 years on how to open the mind to letting go of whatever it needs to let go of and how to shift the energy system toward mobilization, that the natural direction, my take is the natural direction of our genes and of this energy system is toward whole wholeness, health and wholeness. And if we interfere with it, because we're in charge of the process, we can interfere with it and take it out of its propensity to move toward health and wholeness. And that's become the habit of what you know, the ancient scriptures refer to as the mind of man, is we've gotten stuck in that. And so basically what I did with you is pulled out all the stops of everything that I'd done at every level of intensity, which I couldn't just train anybody else to do without a whole lot deeper contact and such. But basically I took everything that I have learned over the last 50 years and put it into what we ended up doing, a 3-day session, and you very courageously and bravely breathed through all of it. And, you know, some of it's pretty intense for sure, but that intensity is part of facing the intensity of those energetic patterns when we put them into our structures, being able to open up and move them out. And, you know, one of the things I'll often say to people, in fact, I was talking to a gentleman the other day, I've been doing some one-on-one work with, and he was talking about, you know, the thoughts that kept coming to mind, and it kept coming to mind. I said, well, just threaten it with a fast. Threaten your mind with a fast. Tell it you're going to stop eating. You know, just kind of tongue-in-cheek. But fasting is a part of breaking down the mind's resistance to change, as is the kind of physical intensity that we did in that 3 days between the breath work and, you know, as I say, the different places that we worked would cover about 30 different trainings that I've done over the last 50 years to put all those pieces in place to make that kind of shift occur. So thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it. It's something that I kind of, had almost, you know, laid aside. And so you kind of encouraged me to get some of that stuff back out, which I did. And so I appreciate your willingness. And you definitely open a space for me to be looking at doing something in addition to what we've been doing when it comes to working one-on-one. You know, that it's really like, in fact, I've created a 3-day, as I said, one-on-one intensive that I'm planning to do with people, and it's going to be entitled Into Being, an Awakening to Quantum Still Point. Because really, it's stepping into a quantum energy space. In that still point, that's what happens in the still point. And so, stepping into each of the techniques that we used to produce that was what you inspired. So, thanks for your willingness. I wouldn't have thought of doing this, except you showed up at the right time, and it's like, oh, you know, okay, let's pull out all the stops. That's what I did. Yeah, I'm glad you got to be the beneficiary of it. It was cool.
Yes.
When I got home, I said to Jeannie, I'd forgotten how much fun it can be.
And it was fun for the most part for me. And I'm so thrilled that we could be a part of each other's lives in different ways. But for the good of all, and it is amazing how it all came about. So, you know, it was moving for me when you would do the energy work, and not all the sessions were, you know, very intense, but there were some real intense moments when, you know, real intense, and
How's your bite doing now?
Powerfully intense. Say again, please.
How's your bite doing now? I know that's been a major challenge. You've gone all over the country, and
yeah.
I can't imagine how many dollars you spent to try and get your bite moving in the right direction. How is it doing since last weekend?
I basically spent my retirement money in health pursuit, and the bite is much, much better. For those that might be listening, my lower jaw is off on both axes, if that makes any sense. And looking at me, you can see the jaw. Michael, how would you explain that? Tilts to lower, one side's lower than the other? That be...
Michael, you're muted.
Excuse me, I had pushed my mute button. Yeah, your jaw is to some degree still tilted. If you were looking on a horizontal plane, one side of your jaw would be lower than the other. But also, if we looked from an axis where we're looking into your ear, the one side of your jaw is forward compared to the other. So two different axes that are off. And
yes. Appreciate you helping with that explanation. And I've known this for several years, because when I go to different dentist offices, the dental, you know, the professionals, the ones that are a little more studied in this area than the average, you know, dental office, you could actually see this on the CBT scans, you know, the three-dimensional scans they would do of my head. And
right.
This has come so much, you know, TMJ, the joint. So the joint.
Of your joint. Yep.
Thank you. And how one is jammed in the joint and the other is very loose. So this not only the jaws challenged on one axis, but both axis. So quite interesting.
Right.
And so back to your original question, my teeth are coming together quite a bit better, much better.
Cool.
And my study on this is many of us walking around, us beings, have challenges in this area when the teeth do not come together properly. Our proprioception, our moving through space and time, our brain sensing this, is what is challenging a lot of
sorted
issues. Yes,
and that wasn't something we addressed specifically. But when we do still point breathing, you know, anyone who's done still point breathing. meeting with me, you'll notice one of the things that we'll ask people to do is to refrain from swallowing. This TMJ, about a third, this is, you know, one workshop information from about 30 years ago of study, and about a third of the innervation of the body, literally the whole energy flow of the body, goes through that joint. And most people, their jaws are so off that they cannot swallow without opening that joint and cutting the energy flow. And so when one's doing still point breathing, and this is, you know, one of the arenas we address, when one's doing still point breathing and they keep swallowing, it's a way that the mind avoids, very much like John Sarno's work, where he says that back pain is unconscious rage and all pain has to do with repressed or shut down emotional energy. And so when one can keep the jaw open while they're breathing, then those energies can process through and they're not interrupting. It's like the ego's trick of interrupting the flow so that the vitality isn't built strong enough to allow whatever this is that's been in hiding to come to the surface. And it just becomes a habit. Something as simple as swallowing can be a habit that reduces the ability to process whatever one's been hiding from oneself. And that's why in the still point, it's always, you know, you're not allowed to swallow, but to the degree that you can let go of the need to swallow. And when that energy flow continues, then you can hit the next level where you can process whatever the blocks are. And to me, that's what it's really all about, is processing out those blocks.
Michael, that's
and
so
having
powerful.
Energy flow to do it.
So powerful. You brought something back to my mind, and I appreciate the opportunity to hear more and experience the still point. I've heard you speak about it on the show. Been with you all now. I think it's over 2 years, but I have to go back and really think about it, but it's been a while, and so appreciate all the information. I recall during the sessions you mentioning about the swallowing, and didn't quite put all that together till you just explained it again now. And what that brought to mind is the many years I would be squirming in all the dental chairs with all these procedures and almost gagging. So again, that's a, especially to a younger person, that's a traumatic feeling. And
for sure.
You just brought it all back in perspective for me now. So that's powerful. Thank you.
Sweet. Well, you know, it's interesting. If we imagined a human energy field that is totally, completely, properly aligned, and my take is that the bony structure of the head, the spine, and the pelvis are literally an antenna structure. They're not there to help us stand up. Our muscles cause us to stand up. Our bones are literally a self-adjusting antenna. If you were to look at the micro-movement of the bones of the head, the spine, the pelvis, the arms, and the legs, they are in a state of continuous motion. It's only a millimeter or two, but continuous motion. And when you look, you know, I thank God for my original work in the field of electronics and physics, because what I came to understand from that field and was able to bring to my medical training was that an antenna is in a certain shape, and the shape of that antenna determines what frequencies it receives. If the antenna is out of alignment, you know, I have an antenna on my house, and I it's perfectly aligned, and it's the right structure, and I get a beautiful sound and picture on my TV of Channel 3. If somebody goes up and bends the arm of the antenna and turns it backward, all of a sudden, my picture gets snowy, my sound is gone, and my signal's gone. Well, most people, you know, if you imagined a human energy system that's at 100% alignment and 100% vitality, there's nothing you can hide from yourself in that state. Mm-hmm. You can't dissociate from contenting your own structure and be at 100% vitality, therefore at 100% wellness. You can't do it. And so what happens is we are taught, we are fed in ways like, you know, go into the average restaurant today, and you know, Jeannie and I went out for dinner yesterday, and you know, I won't eat the hydrogenated plastic that they feed people in restaurants on their, let's say, on a baked potato. And so I asked the gentleman, gee, do you have any butter? Oh, no, we don't have butter. Wait a minute. This is a huge, like, this is a 500-seat restaurant. You must have butter. So he goes back to check and he's back, no, sorry, we don't. Oh, okay, how about olive oil? You must have olive oil. Oh, yeah, we probably have olive oil. Goes back up. No, we don't have olive oil. We only have, I forget what it was, but some kind of seed oil.
Oh boy.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole culture is just dead in a way that drives vitality down, drives people into disease. We're taught to think in a way, you know, just look at the television, how much anger and rage and hate and fear and drama and trauma and war there is. And those energetic patterns shut the vitality of the system down. We are taught to align ourselves in a way that we don't stay at 100% vitality so that we can hide things from ourselves and become really good card-carrying members of the one world universal religion of blame. You can only be a member of that religion if you're sick. You can't be a member of that religion and be well. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
Because in order to dissociate from content, you have to shut down some part of your own energy system. And this whole culture is custom designed. We're sitting in this restaurant, and we're in one room in this restaurant that I guess probably spreads over five or six rooms, probably 500 seats. And there were seven television sets in the room we were in, like huge, you know, 60-inch or whatever television sets in this one room that was probably 30 by 25.
Wow.
Built for unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then you get the alcohol, and then you get the seed oils, which, you know, seed oils are deadly. And then you get the hydrogenated food and the sugar, and the nutrients are taken out of it. And that's basically our culture. And until we start to correct those, and if we are, if we've lived that lifestyle and we are physiologically out of alignment and we, our vitality is down at, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, if people who are severely symptomatic, their vitality is somewhere down there. If that person goes to 100% vitality in an instant, man, the trauma that's going to move, the intensity of that healing process is going to be enormous. It takes a lot of willingness. And most people won't stick to whatever it is that opens the space for that healing, because to do it, they have to face and they have to deal with and they have to feel and they have to process whatever not only they have hid from themselves by living that way, but what their bloodline, what their generations have hidden. And the whole objective of this work is literally to bring this whole energy field into proper alignment, literally the bony structure, so that it is the antenna it's designed to be. And it's not a fixed antenna. As I say, it's in a state of motion all the time. And so it's a self-flexing, self-adjusting antenna. In one state, it brings in one set of frequencies. As it moves through its range of motion, it brings through a whole range of frequencies. If some part of that antenna is physiologically or emotionally traumatized or compromised, those energies are just missing from the system. It's like bending the arms on the TV and all of a sudden my nice, clean, clear picture and sound turned to crap and it's snowy and flipping around and, you know, all of that goes on. That's basically what happens when we are out of alignment and we're not, this system isn't allowed to move through its full range of self-adjusting in terms of the frequencies that it receives. And you go back to the Aramaic scriptures, which are about physics and physiology, and you hear the statement made that in the Creator's energy field, we live, move, and have our being. And my take is, you know, if we recognize that the Creator is love, and we are made in the image and likeness, then we are love. Now what we know from a physics point of view is when you get an energy field moving through another energy field with which it has resonance, there's a transfer of energy between them. If in the field of love we live, move, and have our being, then that literally induces in every cell of our structure vitality and the presence of love. If we fall out of alignment with that, then we step into disease process, and we can shut down those energies that we don't want to feel and deal with. And so for somebody who's willing to do the intensity that you were willing to go through, that's, to me, that's like the whole objective of this work. And we're working to give people tools wherever they're at to be able to do the process.
Yes. You know, Michael, I share with the folks listening, for 20 years, I realized I left the corporate world. I went to study health. And I had been on a search for optimal health myself, watching my father suffer early in life and pass from this earth plane, working on figuring out, and I understand now more about figuring out, but trying to process what happened. What is happening with people's lives? And I've watched people over the years working in the wellness center that were doing, quote, I put it in quotes now, everything right, diet, exercise, and still pass off this earth plane. And it wasn't
without until, forgiveness.
Yes. It wasn't until I found you and your work and started putting these things together, and still to this moment, learning all the time and finding myself in the place I am now, I have literally gone coast to coast searching for help. And not because I'm independently wealthy. I worked for an airline, and I had access to wonderful flight seats when they were available. So I was blessed in that regard. Literally, right. On coast to coast. And to speak about the things we've spoken about in bringing these practitioners and saying, what is this man saying in this YouTube video that my teeth got to come together? But no one has touched any of those things. They'll just look at you and say, well, I think this will help. And again, it did for a little while, may bring a little relief, but it doesn't. Never got to the root of the problem till we finding the work that you're doing.
Well, so, you know, they called Yeshua the great physician because that's what he was, and he knew where the core of it was, and the core of it, the missing piece in the culture, is forgiveness. We've been taught to pardon each other. I'm a member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame. It's all your fault, but I'll let you off the hook, as though that's going to change anything that's moving in me. We need to shift back to a state of responsibility and recognize that forgiveness is about how I handle and process out every energy in me that never belonged in me. Otherwise, if I'm not willing to face and deal with and process through and forgive that, remove that, it's going to have its deleterious effect wherever it's stored in the tissue structure. That is the cause of all disease. And we're not meant to be diseased. Our natural inclination, right from the genes up, is to move toward health, wholeness, and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
That's our natural state, would be my offering.
Yeah. And I remember learning from you about John Sarno. When a cell is, what is it, the oxygen's reduced by just 5%?
Yes. Yep. It's oxygen 5%. Missing from a cell by the muscle restriction, by being out of alignment, creates a 5% lack of oxygen that cells in excruciating pain.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's been me for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, sir, I'm delighted that you that storm happened for our sake, that you headed in this direction and we got to spend some time together. And I thank you for inspiring me to put together that 3-day personal intensive on moving into being and awakening through quantum still point. Awesome.
So blessed to be a wonderful part of that, Michael. Thank you, Jeannie, and so much appreciation for it. And looking forward to continuing with your exercise and continuing to work with you.
All right, my friend. Take care. Blessings. Lots of love.
Blessings. Bye now.